back. And one of my favorite travel journalists, Neil Schwartzberg, is with us. And in our continuing series on the rediscovering of America, we're going to chat a bit about Alabama wonders she has discovered. Good morning, Neela.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm wonderful, Neela. And how are you?
I'm good. I'm all excited about Alabama, Northern Alabama wonders.
Well, it's a very interesting article, and what would you like to start off with? First of all, you start off by saying the Ave Maria Grotto in the Cathedral Caverns, the Jesse Owens also museum is there.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we start with the Ave Maria Grotto? Or
the Ave Maria Grotto is an amazing place. And after we talk about it, I'd also like to talk about some of the other things that I didn't have enough space to go into in the article that I just mentioned really briefly. But the Ave Maria Grotto is a fantastic place. It's really pure folk art, and I really have a resonance for folk art because it's the creativity of people that comes out without formal training. And I think it's very special because it reflects something that comes from within. And the grotto was the work of Brother Joseph, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Zadel, who was a monk from the St. Bernard Abbey in Cullman, Alabama. And he was born in Bavaria and came to the U.S. when he was 14, and he never left the monastery once he got there. But he created 125 small stone and cement structures, and he used everything from bits of glass to cold cream jars. This wonderful landscape.
Incredible. He started in 1912, according to your article, when he was 34 years old, and finished the last one in 1958 when he was 80.
Yes, yes. And that wasn't his job. That's what he did in between.
Well, I guess when you're in a monastery, you have a lot of spare time.
Well, he kept the furnaces going. His job was to
supply shoveling the coal, you say, yes.
Yeah, so it was a pretty physically demanding but not particularly challenging a creative position. So he started to do these sculptures.
How very wonderful, huh?
Yeah, they are. And the monastery has allocated 4 beautifully landscaped acres, and they're just set along this path, and you walk along, and they're just out there. They're beautiful. They're charming. They're sweet. They're inspiring. They're just lovely.
And what's also terrific, I think, Neela, is that, you know, had you not written this article, and have we not been talking about it on the air, how many people know that this exists? I mean, I certainly did not.
Mm-hmm.
Right here in Alabama, which is just real close to where I am. Well, fairly close anyway.
You could do it as a trip. I don't recommend it. It really is a wonderful place.
But it all goes back to rediscovering America. Do we pay that much time to what's around us and the things that are available? And, as you point out with a number of different things in this article, you know, they're right in front of your eyes. Take a look around.
Yeah, we don't really see them because we're very busy going off to other countries, which
exactly.
is wonderful, and I love that. But it's been a real trip for me to discover, a trip in several different ways of thinking, all the very terrific things there are in this country. And so I'm delighted to have the opportunity to let people know about some of the things that are just around the corner.
Right, and I think we should let the people know that this article and these photos, which are quite spectacular, are up on the website.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go to
offbeattravel.com.
Took the words right out of my mouth. Now, the Cathedral Caverns.
Mm-hmm.
It was another spot.
Yes, yes.
Tell us a bit about that.
That's beautiful. It's another Alabama wonder, and it was discovered by a man by the name of Jay Gurley in 1952. And he originally called it the Bat Cave. I don't know why. Maybe I'm sure there were bats. But anyway, the story goes that his wife took one look at this place of incredible beauty and said it looked more like a cathedral. So they changed the name wisely to Cathedral Caverns. Eventually, finances required him to close, and the state of Alabama bought it in 1987, upgraded it, and opened it as part of the Alabama State Park System in 2000. And it is really impressive.
Well, and what's interesting is that he discovered this, and you know, quite by accident. And mm-hmm. I've experienced that because while in the Dominican Republic, I discovered some caverns, and really very, very large. Now the government is into it. It doesn't carry my name, unfortunately.
I know.
But we used to go through, we take groups through there with flashlights because, as you say in your article, it's really dark in these caverns. And you've got, you know, I always get confused between stag light and stagmite, but anyway, one's up and one's down. And
I know I had to research it before I put it in the article because I wanted to make sure I had to go in the right direction.
There's a lot of it, and people understand what we're talking about, even though if we don't pronounce it correctly, they are incredible. What amazes me is they're all over the world. I'm sure there's still lots of them that have not been discovered. I discovered one, but I was going by horseback one time and saw this big hole and went down in there and. There was a whole world, and with all sorts of stuff. Anyway, let's get back to your article. You wanted to chat about a miracle worker,
and I think that's really
an interesting subject.
And I wanted to bring it up because the 2006 season starts June 9th, and I want to let people know in time so they can put it on their calendar because this is theater at its finest, I think. Miracle Worker is the story of Annie Sullivan and Helen Keller.
Right.
And it's performed in the backyard of Ivy Green, Helen Keller's home in Tuscumbia, Alabama. And what makes it special is it's outdoors, which I think gives it a wonderful open feeling so you don't feel like you're closed in. And the platform is raised, and it's just a few feet away from the audience in the actual backyard. And you can tour the house and go through the rooms before the play. And then you get a sense of what life was like because it's set up with all the original furnishings and artifacts. And then you can go outside, and when you get a feel for what the house looked like, then you can actually see it in the stage. The other thing that's really amazing about it is that they have interpreters who use American Sign Language to provide the, you know, the verbal part of the play. And these people are excellent. Their face reflects the emotions, the feelings, while their hands do a ballet of content, of give and take.
Beautiful.
It's a beautiful experience, it really is. And then when you find out the story, it's even more impressive because it interweaves the remarkable story of Helen Keller with the very impressive story of Annie Sullivan. And I didn't know anything about Annie Sullivan before this. But she is one impressive lady with tenacity and courage that is very, very impressive. Briefly, Annie Sullivan was born in Massachusetts in 1866, and her parents came to the U.S. to escape the Irish potato famine. But her mother died of tuberculosis when Annie was only 8. Her father left 2 years later, and Annie and her brother was shuffled off to the infirmary and almshouse for the poor and indigent in Massachusetts. And while Sullivan was devoted to her younger brother, he had tuberculosis on top of being physically crippled. And he died not long after they arrived. So there she was. She herself was almost blind because she had contracted a bacterial infection in her eyes and they didn't know how to treat it.
What age is she at this point?
She's a young woman.
Right.
She's maybe in her early teens.
Right.
And they gave several operations to restore her vision. None of it worked. Finally, she was able to convince them to let her go to the Perkins School for the Blind. And it was at that point that life began to improve for her.
Mm-hmm.
Successful surgery restored some of her sight. Not a great deal, but enough to, you know, get around. And she graduated valedictorian of the class.
Amazing story.
Yeah, yeah. So the two stories woven together in this incredible outdoor place. It's just a wonderful experience. The effect is magic.
And one other incredible individual that you mentioned in this article is, of course, Jesse Owens.
Yes. The story is so impressive. When you go to the memorial and you see the replica of the cottage, the shack he was born in, you realize how far that man came. And of course the thing about the Jesse Owens story that I like the best is that in 1936, Owens was, of course, a world-class athlete. He was probably the fastest runner in the country, and he was a fantastic broad jumper.
In the world, in fact, yeah.
Yeah. Yes, as he showed in Berlin. Right. In 1936, Hitler had just came to power, and Hitler wanted to showcase the German athletes in the Olympics.
And needless to say, Jesse Owens was not blonde-haired and blue-eyed.
No, the only thing worse than a world-class black athlete, I don't know what would have been worse for Hitler than a world-class black athlete, except maybe if he was Jewish or something.
Ah.
And I say this being Jewish.
Yeah.
So Hitler was looking forward to having the Germans just run right over Jesse Owens, pun intended. But what happened is just the opposite. Owens became the darling of the crowd. They absolutely loved him, and he won his races. And then, of course, Hitler threw a little hissy fit and stomped out of the stadium. But there's also a very sweet story about how one of the German athletes, Luz Long, was a broad jumper, and he and Owens, and of course Luz was the blonde-haired, blue-eyed prototype German athlete, and he was a fine athlete, but he was also a very nice human being, and he and Owens actually became friends.
Jesse Owens' story has always been very touching, and the number of things that he did, of course, it did certainly give Hitler something to think about, didn't he? He had at a very critical time. But, you know, getting back to the Jewish part, it was Sammy Davis' story was, you know, here I am, I'm black, I'm Jewish, and I only have one eye. So, now let's move on from there. Where are we at?
And Sammy Davis was an incredible performer.
Yeah,
oh,
absolutely. If you go, tell us about that. How do you get there? What do we do?
Well,
Huntsville, I guess.
Huntsville is a very good starting point. There's good air traffic in and out. It's a good place to stay. It's centrally located. Another place to stay that I actually liked quite a lot is the Marriott Shoals Hotel and Spa, which just opened. And that's in the Shoals, the Muscle Shoals area. That's a lovely, lovely hotel with beautiful rooms and family-friendly pool. It's very cute. They have, I don't remember what it's called, like zero entry or something. It starts with just like less than an inch of water, and you can walk in from there into this full depth of the pool. So I recommend those two places to stay, either inside of Huntsville, where there's many hotel choices, or the Marriott Shoals. And there's also fantastic places to eat.
Yeah, that was my next subject, was the food.
Oh, man, the food. You know, I'm a country cooking kind of woman.
I didn't know that.
Oh, my God, yes. I'm a real barbecue freak. And country cooking and barbecue, I just love it. So I was in food heaven down there. There are three places that I think is really fantastic that we were able to eat. And one is the Clonch Cafe in Tuscumbia. And it's a little place. It's in a beautiful park called Spring Park. And we had the most fantastic Southern fried chicken with a crispy outside and a tender, moist, melt-in-your-mouth chicken inside.
Mm-hmm.
Great. With their specialty squash casserole and something that I only had down in Alabama, banana pudding.
Banana pudding.
Yeah, who knew?
Yeah.
Banana pudding is a big dish down there. Did you know that?
Yeah, well, it is here in Florida as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I'm from the north.
I know. Those New Yorkers, you know.
Yeah. But we know what a good bagel is.
Well, you sure do. We die for good bagels, don't we?
Look, I'm quite the bagel snob, too. So that place had fantastic food. Then we also went to Hester's Rocking Chair Restaurant, which served... have you ever been eaten in Cracker Barrel?
Yes.
I love Cracker Barrel. I do. I confess. I adore Cracker Barrel.
Yeah, you like the shopping part as well as the food.
Actually, I don't buy the stuff. I just love
look
the food.
At it. Yeah.
But Hester's Rocking Chair looks just like... It could have been the model for it. It has the shopping at the front part of the restaurant, and it's got all those incredibly cute, charming things to buy. And then in the back, they serve fantastic food.
Yep.
So I had one of my favorite dishes, country fried steak with sawmill gravy.
Well, they actually have a map called the Cracker Barrel Trail, and you can eat Cracker Barrel from the north all the way to the south and look at the menu and just plan it along the way.
Been there, done that.
Yeah. Neil, a great article. We're running a little bit over. We've got to run. Listen, don't be such a stranger. We haven't talked to you in a while, and I love chatting with you.
Can I just say one more thing real fast?
Yes, absolutely.
Big Bob Gibson in Decatur, Alabama.
Big Bob Gibson.
Yep, Decatur, Alabama. Fantastic, fantastic barbecue.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll look forward to it. Thanks a lot, Neil.
Take care, Roy.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye.
Neil Schwartzberg, always a pleasure and lots of fun. We got to go to break, and when we come back, the one and only Peter Flaherty will be with us, so stay tuned.